So a virus is a very simple thing. It is nothing more than a snippet of genetic code that is surrounded by a protein coat. So it's much less complex than bacteria. So a virus cannot self-replicate. It doesn't have all of the machinery to do that. And so what they do is they hijack other cells to be able to do that. They enter the cell wall of another cell and hijack their machinery to make copies of themselves. And they often kill cells in the process of doing that. And that is what makes us sick. Because viruses don't have this cell wall of their own, they're much harder to treat with drugs. Bacteria are much easier to target with a drug like an antibiotic, which would attack the cell wall. For a virus, you can only use antiviral medications, and we don't have very many, and they're not that effective. They often work by preventing the ability of a virus to enter the cell or inhibiting its ability to operate once it's inside of the cell. The other tool that we have for viruses, though, are vaccines. Vaccines help our immune system recognize a virus when we encounter it in the wild with an immune response that we've already trained up our body to do with the help of the vaccine. And that protects us from the virus. You'll be familiar with many of these: chickenpox, the flu, measles, mumps, rubella. We've done this for many viruses. There are very few viruses that you can eradicate. You can only eradicate a virus when there is no other reservoir than humans to maintain the virus. So as I said, many of these diseases are zoonotic, which means there's an animal reservoir, which means that it can reemerge or jump to the human population at any time. Plagues are part of the human experience. What's happening is not new to our species, even though it's new to us. We've been afflicted by plagues and pandemics since the beginning of time. The Black Plague was catastrophic. What we see is that the denser the population, the easier it is for disease to spread. We see this in animals too. If you have lots of chickens living in close proximity to one another, they are more prone to disease. If you have lots of cows living in close proximity to each other, they are more prone to disease. Add on to it that we've become far more mobile with international air travel and what have you, and it becomes so much easier for these diseases to become pandemics, especially if they're respiratory in nature, and we can transmit them through aerosols or droplets. So we saw it with COVID, you see it with flu. Those are examples of respiratory viruses. So the big one in recent memory was the 1918 flu pandemic, which emerged in the waning days of World War I, at a time when the world was actually quite globalized because of the war. We had large movements of people all over the globe living in difficult circumstances. So the population was very susceptible to a new virus. And this was a novel flu virus, so our immune systems were not familiar with it. It infected approximately 1/3 of the world's population. And we don't have great numbers, but we think it killed anywhere between 50 to 100 million people, which was a large percentage of the population at the time. And this pandemic lasted for approximately 2 years. This was before we had flu vaccines or really even knew how flu viruses worked. It's what we call a pandemic because it did affect every country around the globe. We've had a number of smaller epidemics, which are also serious outbreaks, but they tend to be contained to a smaller region. One example is that first SARS outbreak that we talked about, which is a different but related coronavirus that, you know, surprisingly did the exact same thing that it did before. It emerged in China in November. So there's something to that that's probably worth looking into. We had the swine flu of 2005. And then we had another pandemic, believe it or not, which was the bird flu in 2009. That, again, circled the globe and it infected approximately 1 billion people. And killed 300,000 worldwide. So it was a pandemic, but it was not as lethal or significant as what we're experiencing now. So with COVID, we've already lost more than 300,000 people in the US alone. Just to compare the two, not all pandemics are created equally. Then we had Ebola in 2014 that emerged in West Africa, and later again in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2017. We learned a lot from our efforts to control Ebola that have helped us in our response to COVID now. One of the first things that we learned is that you really can and you must embed research in an outbreak. You don't just respond, but you have to be ready to conduct research in the middle of an outbreak. And one of the reasons for this is that you can't test vaccines against new diseases unless you have an outbreak. That is your opportunity to see if this vaccine is effective or not. And so you want to be ready to capture that window of opportunity. And that requires a lot of forward planning. We need to think, you know, what is everything that we can do today to be ready to test a new vaccine when there is an outbreak tomorrow? Not knowing what that outbreak is going to be, which is an incredibly difficult scientific problem and organizational problem. After Ebola, we developed a new organization called CEPI, which is the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. And this is what they do. They have what we call a just-in-case strategy, where they try to guess what some of the new viruses will be with pandemic potential. And they make a bet and they develop vaccines up to a certain point so they're ready to be tested if there's an outbreak. It's a guess. And they have something called a just-in-time strategy, where they develop platforms for different vaccine technologies that can be sort of semi-agnostic about what the new pathogen will be. But they are flexible, so you can develop them in real time and respond. This is, in fact, what happened with COVID. So COVID is what the planners call Pathogen X. It's a statement of humility. It says, we don't know what's coming, but we know that it's coming. And so what do we do for Pathogen X? And thanks to much of the careful planning and investment that CEPI did, they were able to start work with companies on 9 new COVID-19 vaccines within 1 month of the outbreak, which is truly remarkable. And one of these vaccines is the Moderna vaccine that we've all heard about that received emergency use authorization from the FDA. And it has one of these just-in-case platforms, which is an mRNA technology platform, which can be developed very quickly after you know what the new virus is. The man who runs CEPI is Richard Hatchett. He was former director of BARDA, which is an organization in the US, part of the federal government, that does a lot of biosecurity research and development and pandemic flu preparedness research and development. So they try to create the drugs and vaccines that we would need for some large-scale health event like that. He has an incredible team, and it's an international organization with offices in Norway and London and the US, and a collaboration of researchers from all around the world. They raise money and then contract with companies to develop these vaccines, which often do not have a market. So they do need support. Absent CEPI support, we would not have been ready for this. Usually these are epidemics. They're small scale. So if you're a large multinational corporation, you're not going to invest in a disease with uncertain demand. So more often than not, we don't have a vaccine for these kinds of outbreaks. COVID is unusual because it's so widespread. There's global demand. So we do have companies that are invested in it this time, but That is the exception to the rule.